The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers. Welcome to issue 4295 of The Bugle, the world's undisputedly leading and only audio newspaper for a visual world. This is our latest episode recorded on our UK tour. We were at the Warwick Arts Centre last weekend, where I was joined via the wonders of the internet by Anuvab Pal from India and Alice Fraser from Australia. A small note, the audio from this recording was, shall we say, due to certain technical glitchings, less than 100% optimal. However, Chris has worked his magic wonders, and thanks to a few repairs, a little AI, and sacrificing an almighty motherload of oxen to Zeus, plus a lot of swearing from producer Chris, I hope you'll agree it sounds pretty good. Do enjoy the show.
It's, of course, famously not in the actual city of Warwick. It's not even named after the ancient city of Warwick. It's named after, this man, Warwick Armstrong, the early 20th century Australian cricketer. That's also known as the Big Ship. massive cheat, by all accounts. There he is, like, beating two children at cricket. Typical Australian, a win's a win. That's the Warwick bit of Warwick Arts Centre. The Arts is named after the legendary jazz drummer Art Blakey and King Arthur, who would have been known as Art if he'd actually existed. And the centre bit of Warwick Arts Centre is because this venue is in the geographical centre of the world, if you look at the world from directly above the Warwick Arts Centre. So that's a bit of info on the venue. It is a legendary venue. Joining us from different points in the future, one is 4.5 hours ahead of real time. The other is 11 hours ahead. To give us an insight into what tomorrow brings for this planet, please welcome from India and Australia, irrespectively, Alice Fraser and Anuvab Pal! Hello. How are you both?
I'm well. Sorry, I thought you said, how old am I?
Right.
And I assumed...
I've got the internet, I could check.
I'm very well. Yesterday, I took my toddler to ride a tiny horse. So I'm as well as anyone could possibly be.
Right. And I've once ridden a horse, and never again. Never. The human is not designed to sit on a f***ing horse. Or vice versa, to be fair. Alice has an extremely new baby who featured in the last live Bugle show. Is the baby going to feature tonight, Alice?
He may well feature. He's currently sleeping, but he's 6 weeks old, so he has no respect for time or boobs.
Yeah. Anuvab, welcome. Welcome to the Warwick Art Centre.
It's a delight. It's a delight to be in front of a Warwick crowd. You know, I've never been to Warwick, but I'm a big fan of William Shakespeare, as you know, Andy, and this is probably the closest I'll get to Shakespeare things, being on this Zoom call, talking to an audience in Coventry.
On the 15th of March, on yesterday in the year 44 BC, Julius Caesar, the Roman celebrity dictator, invasion fan, diarist and influencer, put in a solid bid for Roman Empire Assassin of the Year. Always a hotly contested title, but Julius really put down a big marker by getting thoroughly assassinated on the 15th of March, 44 BC. Over the course of his illustrious Caesaring career, which of course encompassed conquering and invading places like it was going out of fashion, which it emphatically wasn't, civil warring the crap out of Rome. Alongside that, Julius, the toga-wearing 55-year-old sword and sandals war epic star, probably wouldn't have spent much time wondering what it would be like to put on a porcupine costume inside out. But he was about to find out on the 15th of March, 44 BC. Of course, in 44 BC, they didn't even know what the C of BC stood for. Or the B, in fact. But on that particular day, it stood for Bye-Bye Caesar, as Big J copped a bit of a multiple stabbing from a group of conspirators that, had they been alive today, would have probably just spent all day gobshiting on a 24-hour news channel about what an arsehole Caesar was whilst offering nothing constructive as an alternative. But people got shit done in those days, because they had deadlines. The death was famously covered by the aforementioned late 16th century BBC history correspondent William Shakespeare. And his play, Julius Caesar, is thought to contain the first example of product placement in a major drama. Et tu, Brute? I ate three. You can't beat the all-new potato. So Chris went and bought me a potato 20 minutes before the start of the show.
I'm trapped in this relationship. Someone help.
Of course, that wasn't the only moment of product placement in Shakespeare. From the original North Folio texts, the original versions, Macbeth, is this a dagger I see before me? No, it's a potato. Have it mashed, have it crisped, have it spud. Then, of course, there was the Merchant of Venice. Take then thy bond, take thou thy pound of flesh. Or for a healthier option, for the same price, you can get 2 pounds of potatoes. Tasty, filling, and even better for you, Shylock, 100% kosher. Potatoes. Better than starving to death or plague. Warning, may cause bloating. Cook thoroughly. Do not eat if you're pregnant or a witch.
Andy, I loved that joke so much, but if you don't mind me giving a note, yep. It would have been better if you'd had 3 separate potatoes.
I'll be right back.
Yep. You can tell Alice Fraser, trained lawyer, brings that kind of level of forensic precision to this podcast. On the 16th of March today is National No Selfies Day. Fran, has anyone taken a selfie today? No? Good. Good. It's well, let's say not just national, though, it's International No Selfies Day. I've promoted it. Take that, Rembrandt, you paintbrush waggling weirdo. The fight back has fucking begun. Oh, here's another picture of me. Do some real art, you 17th century Dutch narcissist. How about a proper piece of artwork, like a melting watch? Or a cow that mistook a tank of formaldehyde for a jacuzzi? Or a urinal that looks like a urinal? Or, if you want to get really old school about it, how about some dogs playing snooker? Oh. Right, Chris, I think we're ready for top story this week. Democracy around the world is f***ing f***ed. And it's f***ed in lots of different places at the moment. We're going to take a look at some of the elections that are very imminent, already taking place, or will soon be coming. Luckily, we're going to completely f***ing ignore the American election because we did some stuff on that last week and it's too depressing to do more than 1 week in a row. So, so let's start in India, Anubhav. Almost 1 billion registered voters, over 2,500 registered parties, 1 million polling stations. It's going to take 82 days, including a 44-day voting phase. They've spent $14 billion on the campaigns, and everyone already knows who's going to win.
Well, yes, you know, as the audience would know, Prime Minister Modi, very powerful Prime Minister, is going to win. But I'm really holding out for this small party in the south of India. They're the chess party. And what they want to do is every one of the members start playing chess religiously and properly. And they've got 6 votes. They've got 6 people in the party, and mine's a 7. I'm really hopeful. But basically, the largest democracy in the world, the 1.3 billion people going in for a vote, but it's going to be in the month of May. It's going to be over 7 weeks. And the Election Commission of India is an incredible body, because it gets pretty much a crazy country to vote in, by and large, a free and fair manner. And even we're shocked as to how this happens. This year, we've got the added benefit of artificial intelligence. It's going to be quite interesting. There are already images that the Prime Minister, the most recent one is where the Prime Minister single-handedly fought a tiger while riding a peacock. He came out and said it wasn't him, but he also said it wasn't him either. So the government wants to regulate AI stuff, because that's the big fear here. There's another video circulating this morning of Prime Minister Modi singing a song with British pop star Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran requesting everybody vote for Prime Minister Modi. Don't know how big his following is here, but again, the Election Commission said this wasn't an actual election appeal. Prime Minister Modi has not denied it. He hasn't said that it's AI generated. The final AI video that's doing the rounds, which is why they want to ban it, is a fake video call between Prime Minister Modi and one Mr. Vladimir Putin. And Prime Minister Modi calls Mr. Putin and says, "Stop this war, man." And this is a real video that's circulating on the internet. Prime Minister Putin said, "I really want to but I just can't help myself and starts crying. And Prime Minister Modi says, all right, I'm coming over. We'll have a chat. Again, the Election Commission has said that this is not a real video. Prime Minister Modi has not said this is not a real video. So these are the sorts of fact-based elections we're going into for 1.3 billion people. So I think the world is safe. But also, Andy, I believe in the month of May, Britain goes into elections as well.
Well,
Britain that set up the democracy over here is going to have their own one there.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great British invention, democracy. We got there way before the Greeks, I think. Well, we might be having a general election. It seems a little bit up in the air. Are you excited about the prospect of a general election? No, there we go. That is the level of democratic fervour that is sweeping. So, frankly, I think we take a bit more AI in our election campaign because it's heading to be drabber than drab. I mean, AI, Alice, is someone who's completely changing, obviously, the way humanity works, the way democracy works. It has the capacity to do wonderful things, but I don't think we're the best species to be in charge of it because we've got a bit of a track record.
I love this story so much. The Indian government asked its tech companies to go to the government explicitly before launching unreliable or under-tested generative AI models or tools. Just to be clear, unreliable or under-tested generative AI tools is pronounced generative AI tools. The government's warned companies that their AI products shouldn't be able to generate responses that threaten the integrity of the electoral process ahead of the upcoming election. And if I know Prime Minister Modi at all, which I should make absolutely clear, I do not. If I know Modi, that means that he thinks that it's going to be used against him rather than for him.
I mean, AI, I think, like, we have a bit of a dodgy track record as a species with wondrous inventions and not using them to their most beneficial purpose. The internet, for example, primarily used for sharing pictures of naked people and cats looking at cucumbers. Gunpowder, obviously we could use it for fireworks instead of just use it just for blowing people up. Mathematics, that's basically, you know, metastasized into free market capitalism, which needs a bit of regulation here. I think the way we've left it unregulated to the extent that we have is like a man getting a new Labrador and training that Labrador to eat nothing but sausages and Scotch eggs and then taking that Labrador with him to a nudist camp. I think, you know, that's that level of short-sightedness. It was quite obviously going to come back to bite us at some point. And also, religion as well. Religion, you know, which could, you know, bring people spiritual, I'm sure for many people it does bring some spiritual peace and enlightenment, but we've largely used it just to just hate people. But we want technology to do things that are beyond the scope of the human body and mind. And this is why I have a bit of a beef with AI in elections, because bullshitting the electorate, we have got that covered. We do not need computers to help us out with that. And this was shown particularly this week with the voting in Russia. Are you excited about the Russian election? No? Has anyone voted in it? Alice, I imagine Australia is very excited about the Russian election because obviously you have to vote in Australia, and in Russia it's, I think they have one man, one vote, and that man is Putin. So quite in different systems.
I think it's a wonderful thing. I think the Russian election is a truly wonderful thing because it is proof that the West did win the Cold War. Even Russia now pretends to have elections where people vote, despite all Russian leadership throughout history ever having been decided by any party in contention going to the edge of the forest where a hut stands on chicken legs, asking it to turn around before entering the house and answering three riddles from the old lady within. That's how Russian leadership is decided. I don't make the rules, but nobody does.
Yeah, so Russia has just started voting. It's over 3 days. I think the bookies' favourite, Vladimir Putin, has won the previous five presidential elections, including the 2008 election when he ran under the name of Dmitry Medvedev, which we covered, I think, in issue 20. That's how f***ing long we've been going. And Putin looks very well set to triumph once again. And what an election-winning machine he is, the 5'7" semi-naked dressage enthusiast. But you have to wonder, do they still get any thrill from, is it not like your Manchester City winning title? Where's the exiled PSG in Paris? And well, why You know, where's the can he do it on a wet Wednesday in Stoke, as well as a freezing his ass off Friday in Novosibirsk? I guess, but so I think I'd like to see him. You know, stretch his. You know, he's kind of proved he can win in Russia. I'd like to see him try to become UN Secretary General instead. That'd be or head of the International Croquet Federation, which I think would be a good solution actually, because he'd still get to rule an organisation with despotic fury, and it would make croquet a lot more exciting. And it, yeah. And he's got, you know, a lot of celebrity support. The pro-Putin rap star KGB has released a special album of songs, and also he's got Stalin's Darlings, who of course won the first series of Dancing with the Tsars talent show. Anubhav, I mean, you look at his election pledges, which include the continuing slaughter of the youth of Russia and ongoing pariah status on the global stage. It's quite hard to see the attraction for Russia, but you say, people seem to keep voting for him according to the official results. What, can you explain why?
Well, you know, I have a contrarian view on this, Andy. I think that Vladimir Putin is setting a new model for democracy for certain leaders, like the Chinese leader and for Prime Minister Modi, because it's one thing, the Western world, you go out and you tell people, please vote for me. Prime Minister Modi, for example, goes out. Now, he's done his election campaign now, and he's going out and saying, please vote for me. Otherwise, oh, it doesn't matter. There's really nobody else. Please vote for me. So he's getting a little cocky. And I think all of that is coming from some good trading from Vladimir Putin. I think Putin, I've been listening to some of his speeches, and he said, you know, go out and vote for who you think is the best candidate. I'm really sorry that the candidate list is so short. You know, I think I think if you're a little cheeky, already knowing the results, you become a bit of a role model for Xi Jinping, for Viktor Orban, for Prime Minister Modi, for the Turkish president. And I think one of the things Prime Minister Modi is hopeful of is if he wins, he may go away from this British system of democracy, you know, where there's a lot of checks and balances. You know, it's really irritating. Apparently, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court can't be dictated to by the Prime Minister. It's a lot of rubbish. So he might, you know, there's a lot of systems you guys set up where, you know, it makes dictatorial power very, very hard. And that's why, you know, you need the Vladimir Putin model of democracy, where it's Vladimir Putin running against Vladimir Putin. And that really levels the playing field. In fact,
I mean, we all are our own worst enemies, aren't we? Sorry, that's not true of Putin. He is everyone else's worst enemy.
Now, here in Britain, we've got our election coming up at some point in the next what is it now? It's got to be in the next 10 months, basically. We've seen the level of excitement amongst, and I imagine Bugle listeners are more politically engaged than average, and no one here is excited about it. So this is the state of our democracy. And well, the big Democratic story this week was the racist Tory donor, Frank Hester. There he is, the health tech multimillionaire. He's worth over £400 million, apparently. He defended himself, these comments he made about Diane Abbott, saying these remarks had nothing to do with her gender nor colour of skin, which does make you wonder why he chose the words that she wanted to, made him want to hate all black women. Those two statements don't blend particularly harmoniously, I don't think. I mean, the Conservative Party basically said that he wasn't really racist. I think just when you're the Conservative, just don't judge people by your own standards. Try to bring in a little bit of and also look, we do need to see in a bit of. I don't want Mr. Hester's comments to make you want to hate all multimillionaires. Let's not stoop to his.
His level.
Oh, you do right.
Sometimes I don't understand nuance. This gentleman said Diane Abbott, because of her policies, should be shot.
Yeah.
He later said my statements were misconstrued. Now, I'm not quite sure what he means by it. Can you explain?
He mentioned a photography session.
Oh, right. Right.
Or possibly out of a special cannon in a special hot air balloon so that she can float across the country sharing her wisdom. Maybe he didn't mean that, but maybe he did. Let's, you know.
They're right to not take action. If all it's going to be is a lady in a balloon, I think that's completely fair.
Who here thinks that the Conservative Party should give his money back? It's at least 10 million, possibly 15 million. Who thinks they should give it back? That's fairly unanimous. What puzzles me about it? I mean, because they're saying they don't need to give it back. He's apologised and all that. Obviously, they can't really afford to give it back. But let's not forget, this is the Conservative Party we're talking about. I think it's the same Conservative Party that likes to bang on endlessly about how people shouldn't rely on handouts. I'm pretty sure it is the same one. It is the same one, isn't it? It's not a different Conservative. It is the same Conservative Party that basically tells people off on benefits for bleaching off the state. It's that one, isn't it? It's that one. Yeah, it is the same one. I'm not confused. So,
Andy, I think there's one simple solution that'll get the entire nation behind them.
All right.
Rishi Sunak walks into the betting shop and puts all 15 million on England to win the Euros this summer.
All right, okay.
And finally, the country unites.
Right.
Because we could all of a sudden solve our massive debt problem simply through that fella.
Right. That would make more sense than some economic policies of the Conservatives. In Liz Truss economics, that is the equivalent of just putting your money in a low-interest high street savings account in terms of the reliability of it.
Also, Andy, just a very quick question. Now, we're quite good at corruption where I'm from.
Yes, yeah, I see that.
And we've made an art of it. Now, it seems like in your country, you have political contributions that go to support a certain political cause.
Yes.
May I be bold enough to suggest a slightly different model that we use here?
Yeah.
We use the model where if a political party needs money, it creates some sort of a financial raid or some sort of a set of accusations on a corporation who immediately contribute to the party and agree to their policy. So if you change it to a step-by-step threat-based corruption system, it would be much more beneficial than a values-based one.
I can't argue with that.
I think my favourite part of this is where they were asked if they would give the money back, and Lord Barwell, who's a former minister, said that his party shouldn't accept further donations from Mr. Hester, but that we may have already spent some of the money that has already been given, because that's how money works. You know, you get to decide which exact dollar has already gone out of the coffer, and all the other indistinguishable dollars couldn't possibly be used to pay this guy back.
So, I mean, the whole issue of how political parties are funded in this country is between village cake sale, if you're the Liberal Democrats, and radioactive cancer on our democratic soul, in the case of the Conservative Party. So I don't know what he gets for 15 million, because obviously the standard donors package of 5 million gets you a game of tennis with the Prime Minister of your choosing, covert influence in the cabinet, a seat in the House of Lords, a free sports hold all, and a commemorative talking Jacob Rees-Mogg sex doll. Imagine if I'd said his actual name, Jacob Rees-Mogg. For the extra 5 million that he's put in, I think he gets 10 free rides in the Royal Gold Cart, a naked hologram of Margaret Thatcher, and he gets to make Jeremy Hunt squat on all fours and then ride him like a donkey shouting, giddy up, budget boy. So,
and don't forget the Christian forgiveness.
Oh, yes.
There's some Christian forgiveness.
So, well, this is Gove. Michael Gove, yes. So just, yeah. He said we need to apply Christian. Okay. I mean, Christian forgiveness, Alice, has not always been a quality that this government has fully exuded, I would say.
To be fair, it's not a quality that Christianity has exuded entirely. I mean, if you look at the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, that's what Christian forgiveness looks like. I want none of it.
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, we said the idea of Christian forgiveness. You look at this party's attitude to some of the human race, and it does actually come from one of the lesser-known gospels, the Gospel According to St. Alvin. This would explain the sense of Christian forgiveness in the current government. This story, I think it's Alvin chapter 14, verse 5 and following. And lo, their boat did land upon the shore, and they did stumble onto the sands, giving thanks to the Lord for guiding them across the seas. And Jesus stood upon a dune, and he did stretch his arms towards the people, wet and bedraggled as they were. And he did say, Are we not all flotsam on the waves of destiny in the eyes of my Father? No, we're not. Off to Rwanda, you bunch of freeloading shitbags. Brexit means Brexit. So. Leaf blower news now. This is what the crowd have been waiting for. Alice, you are the Bugle's official leaf blower and gardening implement correspondent.
A ban on gas or petrol-powered leaf blowers has been passed in Portland. A gradual phase-out will begin in 2026, so these f***ing infuriating petrol-powered noise machine rage generators are going to be working their way out of the system of Portland, and old men in stupid hats can get back to the original way of getting rid of leaves, which is raking them or just blowing them with their mouths. Now, I know there'll be some gardeners in the audience. I know there'll be some people who are passionately attached to their leaf blowers, and to them I can say I understand that for you it is a more useful tool than, for example, a rake, but also go f*** yourself. Why do you do it at 5 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to get my baby to sleep, or 11 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to get my toddler to sleep, or 4 p.m. in the afternoon where I'm trying to have a nap? F*** off.
So I worry about what the people of Oregon are going to do, and the leaf-deluged people of Portland. I mean, have to use electric leaf blowers, but that would be giving in to the woke years of unblown leaves. It's going to be very... a number of states have already passed laws illegalizing the leaf blower. There's a real danger. You drive it underground. Basically, the petrol-powered leaf blower is going to be the heroin of the 2020s. We're a thriving black market, people turning up to secret clubs to blow piles of contraband leaves at each other.
Look, I will give one piece of credit to the petrol-powered leaf blower, which is that they are working both short-term and long-term to meet their goals by blowing the leaves out of the way in the moment and also creating the pollution that will destroy all future leaves. I feel like they're covering off both ends of the issue, but that doesn't make me feel fonder of them.
Just
let the leaves be where they are. Just let the fucking leaves sit on the ground where leaves are meant to be. That's where they're meant to be. Leave them there. Don't touch them. They're none of your business. They're just leaves.
Alas.
Someone
stood up for the leaves.
Can I just say, in defense of leaf blowing?
No.
Alice, can you imagine any Ivy League university in the United States, the prospectus? You know, it always shows a beautiful building with all the, and in the fall, it's always in the fall. That's the season there, I guess. And all the leaves are perfectly blown. Imagine no leaf blowing. You wouldn't get to see Harvard or Princeton. It'd just be covered in leaves.
Good. Dig your way to nepotism, f***ers.
Right, so let's get on to our royal photography section. This is obviously the biggest story to hit Britain in, what would you say, 100, 200, 200 years?
At least, yeah.
The sinful...
Since Richard stuck his kids in the tower. Nephews.
Any historians in? Nephews? Nephews, right. Alice, you know the show. I will not let anything that is not 100% true slip through the net. Huh? Which is why we come to this
podcast. Which is why we are... against this story, 100%
exactly,
Randy.
The hideous deceit this photo. That's not as tall as it was. Kate Middleton does not have a child growing out of her own head. That's a lie. that's a complete lie. It's amazing that this became. Can you understand why it became such a massive story? Obviously, it's an issue of trust. There's trust that sustains the sacred bonds between us, the British people, and our ceremonial feudal relic, medieval cosplay, anti-meritocratic, ostentatiously bling-hatted
God-anointed non-executive overlords in the royal family. And if we don't believe that every single photo is absolutely 100% unedited from the moment the light reflected off their magic royal faces and popped through the camera lens, then, well, we might start wondering if those spangly hats really are magic. Or if it really makes a difference if your induction ceremony involves 800 horses, some 300-year-old artillery being greased up by an archbishop in a special robe. So I guess it's an issue of the fundamental trust between us and our monarchs.
Yes, Andy, not since the Egyptian people looked up at the Sphinx and were like, really? Did he look like that? Has there been such a scandal about misrepresentation of the true image of the royals? Just to be clear, this is an incredible historical moment, Andy, because it is simultaneously incredibly modern and incredibly medieval. Just to be clear, the king is using herbs to treat his cancer. The wife of the heir is mysteriously missing, and the young prince has been exiled to the new world. I feel like we are in a history story, and it's amazing. And this, like, if you've seen the response to this image, particularly this edited image, people are so outraged. They're picking it apart. They're honing in. They're zooming in. They're trying to figure out if Kate Middleton is alive or dead, or if she's being hidden somewhere, or if she's rebelled against the authority of the palace at last. I feel like we've at last reached the full crossover event where the men who believe aliens built the pyramids finally realize that the women who buy the magazines in the checkout aisles with the deranged royal watching speculation join forces. I think that's a wonderful thing. They finally realize that those women are exactly the same as they are, and they can both enjoy just making shit up off the top of their heads and getting really over-invested in it. What a delight.
I mean, Anubhav, obviously, India is our former imperial partners, is that the term? So you still take a keen interest, I imagine, in our royal family.
I mean, a royal family, you know, big news here. But, you know, people are saying, oh, the princess is probably unwell, etc. I have a larger question here for both of you. Maybe it's a cultural thing. Do all photographs have to be entirely true? For example, currently it's Stalin. Yeah, exactly. Currently in my residence, that people can't see it, there is a photograph from when I was 9 years old of me bowling to the Indian cricketer Sachin Tendulkar and indeed getting him out in a match of cricket. This photograph was given to me, photoshopped as a present for my parents. I believed it. They believe it. Everyone who's come to my house has not raised a question about it. They haven't come back since. But you know, this is photographic evidence. And, you know, all photographs, like, for example, I was very confused about the creation of the world.
Right.
You know, some people say, you know, read the Bible. Some people say read Darwin. I was confused. Then I went to Sistine Chapel and I saw that painting by Michelangelo. Hand of God, I was done. I was like, this is God. It's done. Now, later, some people told me it's not true. It's rubbish. As long as people believe the thing, aren't we done? Does it also have to be true? That's why we're there.
I'm going to double down on this, Andy, and say that all photographs are lies.
Right.
All of them. Particularly,
Thank you.
All of them, because they don't show the back of your ears, unless there are any of the back of your ears, in which case they don't show the front of your face. Like, one of the real problems about AI is that all of the pictures that people take of themselves online are like 30% hotter than you on your best day, right? Every selfie you take is going to be like pretty flattering. So the AIs think we're really hot, and they are going to be so disappointed when they find out that we're...
I mean, that Tutankhamun didn't actually look anything like that at all. He didn't have a golden face. Didn't have... Charles the First didn't have a head. and here we are, King Harold there. Didn't actually... You know, that was a fake. He was just rolling around on the floor and something hit him in the eye. But I mean, it's just... can you trust anyone? In the words of Biz Comic, well, many of you read, hounded to his death by the tapestrasi. It's my all-time favourite wordplays. Right, that's... shall we move on to Australia news now? Let's have a sting.
This is wastewater news, the most fun kind of news. This is the news that after measuring our wastewater for drug use, we've discovered that alcohol drinking is down in Australia, but meth use is up. I have never felt so patriotic in my life. At least I think patriotism is what I'm feeling. I sort of feel like chewing the insides of my cheeks and going to a dance party, or maybe cleaning the whole house. I'm filled with a wild and frenetic energy. And I'm sorry, I can't even finish this joke because it's a joke where I pretend that I'm somehow on meth, partly because I'm not on meth. It's funny. Partly as someone who's been breastfeeding every 30 to 90 minutes, 24 hours a day without a single respite for 6 weeks. The idea of pretending I have any energy at all is ridiculous to the point of feeling like I'm insulting the integrity of my own human experience. And partly because the logic doesn't stand up. If I'm suddenly saying I'm on meth, is the premise that I've been drinking wastewater? I don't know. I don't know. I'm in a small coastal town in Queensland. Maybe I've hooked up with a dealer. But if I had somehow managed to get a young man in a bum bag to show up at my house, I'm going to make him babysit. He's taking the two-year-old to the library for story time. I don't want you there.
I think I'm picturing a sitcom here.
ASIC, the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission, has been testing the wastewater and has discovered that Australians spent more than $10 billion on methamphetamine in the last 12 months. That's their guesstimate. The problem is that Australia's consumption of meth and cocaine has climbed post-COVID, presumably because people have taken their masks off and can put things up their noses again.
Six news now. And, well, happy to have two. Some cryptocurrency news. Now this is a headline that I found frankly baffling on numerous levels. Binance, a crypto company, made a crypto perfume in an attempt to woo women customers. Now I think, in a way, I don't know if any headline has encapsulated more about the 21st century world than that. A crypto perfume. Alice, you've kept tabs on the history of cryptocurrency for the Bugle for many, many years. Like I said, I don't really understand cryptocurrency, and I sincerely hope I die that way. I will consider that a life very well lived. Can you explain exactly what they were trying to do here?
Yes, Andy. Binance is the largest crypto exchange in the world by volume. But what that means in the crypto world, which has been struggling over the last 12 months, is that the co-founder of Binance, Changpeng Zhao, pled guilty to money laundering charges and agreed to pay $4.3 billion in fines to the U.S. Department of Justice. Also, Binance lost 75% of its trading revenue, and it was sued for infringement by Bisexual Nancy, who originally owned the trademark on Binance. And as a result, they are doing the selling gold shoes to try and raise funds of the crypto market by trying to lure women in with perfume, because that's the thing that women like. I think it's brilliant. I think most perfumes are aiming to smell like things that don't exist, you know, rebellion, existence, duchess, whatever. Why not have a perfume that smells like cryptocurrency? Some perfumes try to trick you into thinking that they do smell like something. For example, Kenzo Flower is meant to smell like a flower, but flowers smell like heaps of shit. So, I mean, heaps of stuff. Ahem. In defense of themselves, I think they were trying to be funny, and the Binance CMO, Rachel Coleman, said that the idea was pioneered by an all-woman team within Binance, which just shows how much women in cryptocurrency are just pandering suck-ups.
Look, I have to say, I have full disclosure, you know, I used to have, I sold my house and put all my assets into Binance, but now I've decided to move it to a safer investment, Shiba Inu coins, because I like photos of cats. So that's where most of my investments are. So I'm in defense of Binance because, you know, for a long time, all my savings were in there. And I think it's appropriate for the current age to have a perfume that you cannot smell, using money that does not exist to attract a partner who isn't there. So, what better?
I'm so...
It's basically just homeopathic life, essentially.
I'm sort of heartbroken by the troubles that cryptocurrency is in at the moment, because I think there are so many people who, you know, got into cryptocurrency because they love the idea of decentralized finance, or they're really interested in the algorithms that would be involved in creating this kind of thing, or, you know, they believe in the blockchain, or they believe in, you know, all of these beautiful things. But then I think they've been kind of overtaken by a bunch of kids who bought cryptocurrency because they were told to by an idiot on a podcast, and it might as well have been bone and egg pills, and then it worked out for some of them, and now they think they're smart.
Well, as always, Buglers, thank you very much for listening. There are three remaining shows on the current phase of our UK tour. Next Sunday, the 24th in Leeds, then the 28th in Edinburgh, and the 30th at the Lowry in Salford. Then we have a couple of dates at the Leicester Square Theatre in London on the 7th and 8th of June. Do also find all of Anuvab's and Alice's stuff on the internet. I'm sure if you ask nicely, the internet will tell you where to find it all. And of course, listen to Alice's wonderful show, The Gargle, the Bugle's glossy magazine sister publication. For details of those remaining live shows, go to thebuglepodcast.com and click the live button. Also at thebuglepodcast.com, you can join the Bugle voluntary subscription scheme to keep this show free, flourishing, and independent. Goodbye.